This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Welcome to another edition of the Amusement Warehouse Podcast. Today we got a very special guest. The man himself, my idol over there, Gary Otterbacher. Gary, thanks so much for coming on and being with us. I appreciate it.
Hey, Ron. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
I'm glad looking to see your good dress. I like your dress.
Is it cold there? It's just a pullover, a zip up.
Okay.
It's cold in this studio. I can hang meat in here.
Okay, good. I'm nice and warm in Florida.
I know. I can't. I'm coming down next week for IAPA.
Oh, yeah? Well,
by the time people hear this, so go to the big IAPA trade show. Oh, so good. Exciting.
I'll be there.
Are you going to go? Oh, good. Hopefully we can get together.
I've never missed one in my life.
IAPA, really?
Yeah. I mean, I started going there. I exhibited in 1974 was the first time.
I remember I went to, where did we go? New Orleans with you.
Well, you probably weren't born in 74, were you?
I was born.
Okay.
Wasn't old, but I was born.
But that was the first year I did IAPA.
I went to New Orleans. Where did I go with you? To New Orleans?
You went, you worked in the booth at New Orleans, for sure. And I think you did another one.
I think I did someplace like Atlanta or someplace.
Yeah, okay. Hey, are we live?
We're live.
Okay, good. All right.
We're live.
No, you did. Was it Atlanta you did?
Was it where?
Atlanta?
I think I remember New Orleans. I think I went to Atlanta, too.
I remember that.
I think Jill from the Ohio State Fair came with us.
That's right.
Because she spoke French or something.
Hey, she was, yeah, she did speak French, didn't she?
Yeah.
And she was like the top. I give out those Waterman pens, which were $100 pens at the time, for the most leads in a day. And she won it about 3 days in a row.
She's good. She's a good salesman.
You didn't do so well.
I did great. What are you kidding?
Huh?
I did
you
great.
You brought Pepe with you, too. Remember that?
Oh, Jose Rodriguez. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I haven't talked to Pepe. I hear he's still around. He's like, does cruises and stuff. He's a good guy.
He talked to all the Spanish people.
Yeah. You know, some people you just lose track of in life. But I'd love to talk to Pepe.
Oh, yeah.
He's such a good guy. I really liked him. I remember we went to that restaurant with what's that famous
Commander's Palace.
Commander's Palace. And they tried to close poor Gary down with a giant party. They said, sir, it's last call. And Gary goes, no, it's not. I went another round of drinks. And the guy's like, sir, we're gonna close. No, you're not. The other story I remember is when you were we had that seat at some bar somewhere, we're by the bathroom. And you kept sticking your hand out when people came by.
I went over and got tips for working the bathroom.
And we were about to get over. What are you doing? Gary goes, I'm trying to pay my bar bill.
I think I made about $30 in tips.
You just put your paw in every single time.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what happens when he put me by the bar or by the bathrooms.
That's true. Bad location. Oh, my gosh. You got some stories. I came in. I'm scared of what they asked, actually. So, but tell, you know, one thing I don't know that much is your, I know a little bit, but your origin in the business, where your parents were in the business, right? Before you ever
my dad worked for my grandfather, and we lived in Mount Gilead, Ohio. And my grandfather had a car dealership in Elyria, Ohio, that was just a regular used car lot. And then he bought the Chevrolet dealership in Mount Gilead, Ohio. So when he bought that, we ended up moving to Mount Gilead, Ohio. And I was probably about 5, 6 years old at the time. And he worked for my grandfather at that dealership. And anyhow, my dad, all my other relatives, my dad's brother was Rupert Otterbacher, who's kind of famous in Ohio, and all of his sons and everything are still in the concession business. But anyhow, so my dad decided to buy three popcorn trailers all at one time. So he bought these three popcorn trailers, and we worked those popcorn trailers independent. And then he got associated with Fred Nolan.
Yeah.
And he worked, so we still had those three popcorn trailers working the independent route. Plus we played our dates with Nolan Amusement. And then my dad, probably about the time I was 10 years old, he bought a unit, about like eight rides from Nolan. And so then we were in the carnival business. So he got those dates and we started doing those. And then in the wintertime, we were coming to Florida and working with Degler.
Oh, wow.
So I got to be around Irvin a lot, Degler. And like he was one of my idols at the time. And so we
were like Degler's Magic Midways back then, right? Magic Midway.
Yeah. I think we called it. He had a painter named Steffi who did all his painting. At that time, he had the most beautiful trailers, the most beautiful trucks. His office trailer was just fabulous with all the painting the Steffi guy did. And so anyhow, we did that. And And of course, I got to set up plenty of rides. I kind of like held the record for setting it, tear down the Tilt-A-Whirl. I tear the tilt down like an hour and 20 minutes every week. And my dad, he was a pretty tough guy. So I tear it down 100 or hour and 20 minutes. And then of course he'd come over and look at it and make me take all the blocking out off the trailer, stack all the blocking back up nice and neat. And it's because I got done too quick. So that was his way of showing me I wasn't quite as smart as I thought I was. So, but anyhow, we went from that. And so I did that for a number of years with him. And then probably, I was probably about 16 years old, 17 years old. We went to a company called Trailer Craft. And they were the big guys in the business building concession trailers. So he took me there. We went to the factory, talked to the guy who was the owner. And my dad and I went, he took us through the factory and stuff. And I kept looking at the factory, kept going through there. And I kept saying to myself, I can do this. I can really do this kind of stuff. So anyhow, after that, of course, I went to college, played football at college. And I got caught working three times working while I was on scholarship. And that was a no-no. You couldn't do that. So they told me I couldn't do that anymore. And I got married during that same time with my wife, Karen. And so anyhow, next year we went out. After we got married at 18, which was a smart move. And so anyhow, after that, we went out on the road one more year with my dad.
And excuse me one second. What did you study in college? Was it engineering?
It was called industrial technology.
You have an engineering mind in a lot of ways.
I hope so.
Yeah, so, you do. You really do.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And it came by naturally, I guess, at first. But yeah.
I mean, I worked on all the rides. I used to repair the rides. I mean, I used to set up every ride on the show I could set up and tear down. I used to haul them over the road. And I did that. I had a Arkansas chauffeur's license when I think I was 12 years old. There was a guy who advertised in amusement business, and he was the sheriff in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And so for a $5 bill, you'd send him a $5 bill in the mail, and he would send you back a blank Arkansas chauffeur's license. And you just fill your name in there. And the guy's name was Colonel Ed Roberts. It was a $5 bill. The license cost $3. So he got $2. You know, he made $2 profit sending it to you. So I had one at like 12 years old. So I was driving tractor and trailer around like 12 years old on the show. So, I mean, I was pretty pretty intense as far as building things and understanding how things work and set rides up and, you know, and I was like, nobody could beat me setting rides up or tearing them down. So I was good at that.
But because you planned and you knew where things went and you planned it out in your mind, how things, the order of things and not double handling and all those things that.
That's exactly right.
Made sense.
I learned that at an early age. Yeah. I used on this Nolan amusement before we bought, before my dad bought the show, I was like 8 years old, 9 years old. And he'd have me tear down the kiddie rides. And he had some winos that worked on the kiddie rides. And I'd go over there after working the popcorn all day on teardown night. I used to get $3. And I was the foreman for tearing down the kiddie rides. So I'd have these two winos and their two wino wives and me and tear down the kiddie rides. So I did that.
Yeah, I mean, you probably think I don't pay attention, but I know whether you're building trailers or bunkhouses or whatever you're doing, when I've been around you or even laying out maybe your trade show booth or something like that, you know, there'd be a plan and I could see you'd look at it for just a minute or two and you'd take your pencil out and sketch some things with a much smarter, change to it that made a lot more sense. That was pretty cool. So I think you've always
That's what you got to do if you're going to build stuff like I did.
Yeah.
So.
And you could tell right away that's where you go.
Yeah. We went next year after I was married, we stayed on the road that summer. And then that winter, I saved up enough money from working that summer. I think I had about 6,000 cash in a cigar box from working. And so me and my wife that winter, we went down, my dad rented a little, just a little bitty, itty bitty building in Floral City, Florida, for the winter quarters. And so that winter I built my first ever product, which was a funhouse. And it was built out. I built the trailer. I went and bought mobile home axles, which were 10 foot wide. I cut the axles down so that they're only 8 foot wide. Hold up. My battery's running low here, sis. Do you know why? Is this thing plugged in? Hold on a minute, Ron. Let me get this thing plugged in. Better check the cord over there. So anyhow, let me see where we're at here. Get plugged in over there. Oh, here's the problem, Ron. I'm not plugged in.
That new IT guy, you got Nick.
I got Nick here and I got my daughter, both.
Oh.
So anyhow, I built this first fun house. Cut the axles, mobile home axles, cut them down to 10 foot. And I built this whole trailer frame myself. And it was me, my wife, and I had one guy who was, you know, he wasn't a real talented guy, but he could hold things and stuff. So I built this whole frame, built the thing, and I built this whole fun house during the winter. Took it to Jacksonville, Florida. It was the first spot I worked at. I still got the ticket from the first rider. I still have that ticket. So anyhow, I did that. We used to have a guy named Mario Rojas booked on the show with us.
Yeah.
Okay. Mario is a great guy. His son Mario is still in the business. He's with Ridehofer. But Mario used to have two kitty rides booked with us and probably about three games that he booked on the show. So anyhow, and Mario taught me to ride a unicycle. So I rode the unicycle, which was a standard one. And then he gave me a 7 foot unicycle that I used to ride. And so after I built this fun house, we're up in Jacksonville the first day. And Mario come by and he liked the fun house. And he said, hey, why don't you build me a game trailer? So I said, yeah, I want to build a game trailer. Let's do it. So anyhow, I started building a game trailer in the parking lot behind the shopping center in Jacksonville, Florida. So I spent those 2 weeks behind the shopping center in the dirt, back by where we had the trucks and stuff, and started the frame. Went from there to Atlanta, Georgia, worked another 2 weeks on it. And then by then I had the trailer built. I had him a game trailer. So it was the first game trailer that I built. And Mario Rojas still has the game trailer. Okay. And So anyhow, I sold that for $1,400 back then to Mario Rojas.
Wow.
And it was probably, at the time, it was probably the most profit I've ever made on any trailer because I built it all myself. Okay. And so it was kind of neat. And that's how I started. And then we worked the rest of that season on the road. And then that winter, I come to Florida, where my dad had the winter quarters again. But him and I got in an argument. So anyhow, I left. And I went over and I rented a little teeny building. It was like 30 by 40 foot. And I rented this building. And my daughter was born that winter. So I rented this building. And I went in there and I built my first production game trailer. Okay. So I took that game trailer and I took it to Gibsonton, to the trade show. And I think that my daughter was born in 71, in November of 71. And so I took it to Giptown in February. It would have been February of 72. I took it to that trade show. And so I had the trade show and I set it. It was Bob Quesada's first year there with Bob Space Racers. So him and I sat side by side. So him and I were kind of like, you know, the two new guys at the trade show. And so I had my game trailer there, and he had a Southern truck body there. And so I sold my first game trailer there. And I can still remember the guy's name. His name was Howard Coomley. And I don't think many people know his name, but he was around that show, and he was from out in the Midwest. So I sold him the trailer off the trade show I think I sold it for like, I sold it to him for $25,000 or $3,000. And then I got an order from the Smiths out of Ohio. I got an order for two game trailers from them. So I got started on the first game trailer at that warehouse. My dad had a heart attack that time period. He was only like 38, 39, had a heart attack. So my mom called me and told me that. Well, I packed all my shit up out of that warehouse, put it all in my truck, my trailer, and went up to where the show was at, up in Atlanta, Georgia. So I went up there, and I was there for about a week or two until my mom called me and said, all the guys are mad at you because you're bossing them all around too much. She said, you got to take it easy. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll go back and finish my game trailers that I got on order. And you guys can manage the show. So anyhow, I left there. My dad got fine. He was okay. I lived to be about 75.
Was Jimmy around then or no? Yeah.
What's that?
Was Jimmy around then or not yet?
Well, Jimmy is 8 years younger than me. So at that time, I was like 20 years old, let's say. 19 years old. So Jimmy was like 11 years old.
Yeah.
And my sister was 5 years older. So she was like, what's that make her? About 16 or something like that. So anyhow, I went up to Ohio and went to this little town called Crestline, Ohio. And I found a building that was for rent. Okay. It was a space in a warehouse. And they were actually just trying to rent warehouse space. But I convinced the owner of the company to just let me go into this 50 by 50 area with one roll-up door. Let me have that space, and I'm going to wall it off inside. Well, I just went and went to the lumber company, and I bought sheets of galvanized steel. And I just walled myself off in an area in there. So I had this 50 by 50 area. And then I put the first ad in AB, just a little ad, and I did good. I mean, I started selling trailers from then. People had seen the trailer a year before at Gibtown. And so I started in that little building. I was in there I had a year's lease. And at the end of the year, the guy said, well, you got to go. You've been here a year. And I said, well, can I renew the lease? He said, no. I said, okay. So I went down. It was the first time I ever met with an attorney. So I went down and seen the attorney. I said, this guy's trying to throw me out. And I said, I got no place to go. And he said, well, I can fix that for 3 months. And I said, okay. So in that 3 months, I went and I bought a piece of property in Crestline there, which I bought. I think I bought 5 acres and paid $15,000 for that. And so I bought this piece of property and I put up a steel building, the first building I had. I put up a 60 by 100 steel building. And that's how Otterbacher Manufacturing got started, in that building. And I could sell enough stuff to keep rolling. I was always selling more. So I was doing the trade show every year. Like I said, 74, I did the IAPA trade show. And then I think the following year, I did in 75, I was doing the IAPA in 70, or in 75, I was doing IAPA. And then I went to the trade show in Vegas, which had a trade show at that time. And then I did Gibsonton. So we were doing those three trade shows back in 1975. And so that's really how I got started. And things just kind of rolled on from there.
What is it about Ohio? There's so many manufacturers, carnivals.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, Ron. I thought about that before. I'm not so sure. The only thing I can say is Ohio's always had a lot. You know, every county has a county fair. And they're always kind of like, you know, I mean, Ohio's the Midwest, so it's fair country. And I don't know why. I mean, there is a lot of manufacturers in Ohio. And I can't tell you exactly why, other than that all those fairs being there.
Yeah, they seem to crop up in certain areas. You know, I'm always fascinated. Like Pennsylvania at one time had a lot when you had the wheel builders there, Garbrick.
That's right.
The other guy across the street. But Ohio had so many. I know when I was first getting in the industry, there were at least four or five trailer manufacturers.
Well, I was there. This Trailer Craft was there.
Molnar,
Majestic was there. They come Molnar a little bit later, you know, but Majestic started there. Yeah, Funny Fright was there.
What about Molnar? Molnar Manufacturing, M or something?
Yeah, he was there. He was in Ohio. Yep.
There are just so many. I was always curious what it was about Ohio.
I don't know. I mean, it's an industrial area, so you could get all the materials you wanted. So that's the only thing I can think of.
Well, they said there's a ton of how long ago the fairs have these big independent midways with games and food. Now, was that as long as you can remember, or did
what's that? Ron, I didn't get it.
There were so many of the fairs have these big independent midways, independent food, independent games.
Oh, yeah, that's the way it was. That's the way it was, and that's the way it still is.
Yeah.
And so, if you own a show, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Because I remember as a kid, our show would come in. And you'd be trying to set up, and the independent guy who was paying back then was paying about $35 to put his French fry trailer up. He had more say than the guy that was bringing in 20 or 18 rides. You know, you had to kowtow to all those 40 miler guys.
Yep.
And that was the big complaint with Ohio.
But I was thinking that it with so many independent food vendors, maybe that fostered a reason for some of the food builders and things like that.
Yeah.
Because there were just so many. Yep. Who, when you were first coming up, who were the big Gooding was gone by then? Who were the big shows?
No, Gooding was there.
He was still
around. Floyd Gooding was there. Yeah, Floyd Gooding was there. And then eventually Pugh bought Gooding's. And I did a lot of work with Bob when he first started there, Bob Pugh. And then I went on to do business with Jeff and, of course, Danny Houston. So, but there was, and Bates, I mean, I've done lots of business with Eric and Gary Bates.
When did you transition? It seemed like you started out as mostly a game trailer manufacturer. When did you start doing food and why did you move into the food?
No, I did both, but I mean, I started building game trailers first. And then I think in Gibsonton, I'd take a game trailer, and then I'd always take a popcorn trailer. This back in the old days when I'd take two trailers there. And I can remember like a real flashy popcorn trailer for us with all the equipment in it and with the big marquee, not a big marquee, but a marquee like what used to be a flat panel marquee that they had lights all the way around it. And that used to be like a $7,500 trailer back then, you know. And you'd always take whatever you took to the trade show, you'd always sell what you took to the trade show.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's a different era. But
if you're building game trailers, you build food trailers, and that's how it worked. So,
but, you know, I think at least the impact, you know, when I started in the business in the early 90s, but you obviously far before that, but, you know, you had those Chance trailers that were white and they were retractable wheels.
Yeah.
The red lettering, they all look the same.
That's exactly right.
When did you make your mark when you started with the color and the bigger marquees?
Well, that's the thing that we sold in our business, that we had the best looking product. And it's because we did everything in-house. We had our own artist in-house, okay? And we built everything in-house. There was no contractors. We built everything in-house so we could control everything that happened. So we had the flashiest looking trailers and the best quality trailers. And that's how I made my mark in that business.
But was the flash something you thought of? You said, you know, if I make this trailer look great, I'm going to sell more food.
Oh, no, that's how it works.
They're going to do better. Yeah.
That's right. You know, I always had this thing I tell people that, you know, when the guy goes to the fair, do you know where he goes to buy his food products? You know, where would he go to buy, you know, something to eat? Well, my thing was always he'd go to the place he went to last time if it was good. But when it wasn't good, he was always looking for the new joint to buy something from. Well, if you had the flashiest, best looking joint, you're going to get his business. Now, you got to keep his business by giving him good product,
right?
But you're going to get his business. So like in the state of Ohio, when you had all these 40 milers that were bringing in trailers that were made out of plywood, at the time, they'd have a food trailer. It was just sheets of plywood painted white, okay, and no signage, just three awning doors that would open up, and that's what they had. Well, now I come out, and I've got lights running around the awnings, and I've got this kind of stuff. So if the guy went to a French fry joint that he'd been to the year before and he liked it, he'd go back there and buy again, regardless of if he had the flashiest trailer. But when he went there and he didn't like that food that year, you got the shot at him next year. So that was my thing. If you had the flashiest, the best looking trailer, you had the best shot of getting that customer.
And then you moved into the big marquees too. Were you like the first one to do that?
We did the marquees, and then, you know, we started with a flat panel marquee.
Right.
Which was about 3 foot tall. We put humps in the top. We put lights all the way around it. And so then at that time, Wisdom in Colorado, Jerry Wisdom, who was a good friend of mine, he'd went and bought him and Jerry Barber, same thing. Jerry Barber, who had owned Venture, they both ended up buying Vacuform machines. And Vacuforming back in those days, they made all their scenery. And even Chance bought a vacuum for him. I bought a vacuum for him. So like us four guys, and we all bought from the same company and out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And the guy was a good guy. And we all bought machines from him. And you could take a piece of plastic and you could make a wooden mold. And then you'd pull the plastic down over the mold. It was all done in this machine. You heat the plastic, Lexan. You'd use Lexan so it didn't break. And you'd pull the plastic down. And you had a clear sheet of plastic with all this design work in it. And like all the Chance scenery back in those days, all the Wisdom scenery, all Adventure scenery was all made with that and then painted on the backside. So you can put all kinds of detail. So we did our signs. We did that. We were the first guys to have it on food trailers. And you could, you know, if you wanted to have a shape of a cone, you could make the cone. If you wanted it for apples, you can make the apples. And then you could do all the letters where the letters stood off and really enhanced, and you'd backlight it. So we were the first guys to have all that vacuform signage. And we had that, you know, I mean, it was real popular until I wasn't building them anymore. And then they went to these flat panel signs like you see today, these billboard style signs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it was definitely, a big disruption because the marquees were so, you know, kind of mundane and small and things like that. And then all of a sudden you came in with those giant marquees and they really made things look different. And what was your view on, you know, Chance was always about the retractable wheels and low to the ground and somehow you'd sell more because the people could watch you.
That's what they sold. And they believed in that. And we did, I mean, we had a retractable gear trailer too, but we didn't sell as many because we never seen the need for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we'd have a recessed floor in the trailer. So the difference between where they stood on a Chance trailer and where they stood in our trailer was about 4, 5, 6 inches difference at the worst. So it really made no difference.
And so you started building and developed relationships with, you mentioned Pew Shows, Danny Ottaway comes to mind.
Yep.
I mean, it was more than a Worldwide Entertainment Group. It was more than just building food trailers. You'd sell them food trailers, you'd sell them game trailers.
Ticket
boxes. Sell them ticket boxes. You'd sell benches. Offices. Guest relations booths.
Yeah. Offices.
Office. Oh yeah, the offices became real popular. Did that just kind of organically grow out of selling them something? They'd say, "Hey, I need this," and you'd
and
say,
living quarters.
Living quarters. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I have a number of living quarters. I mean, quite a few living quarters and a lot of office. In fact, I got guys right now just begging me to build them an office because they love my offices, and my offices are still out there.
Absolutely. They're still out there. I saw one not too long ago to Knotterbocker.
Yeah. And they love
them. That just kind of came organically because you were just building everything for the show.
That's right. Well, we had to build everything because, you know, it's not a big market. You know, I mean, at one time I was building about 50 game trailers a year in my plant. And then we were probably building about another 20 food trailers. And they were probably building 3 or 4 offices a year. That was kind of like that's about what our business looked like. And then a couple, 3 or 4 loads of ticket boxes every year. So.
But you were such a master salesman with the, you would go visit the shows, go visit the owners, go visit the people. Yeah.
I can tell you a little story. You know, when I when I started in business, you know, you had the telephone, of course. So anyhow, people would call you on the telephone and say, "Hey, Gary, I'm interested in this. I'm interested in that. I seen one of these and I seen one of those." And so I'd say, "Okay, well, listen, where are you at?" So they'd tell me what spot they were at. And I would go get my secretary. I'd pick out a whole bunch of pictures to send them. And I'd send them to the photo mat. Okay, because photo match, you get them done the same day or the next. In fact, I think it was the next day. So I get a whole bunch of 8x10 glossies of what that customer wanted of trailers we already built, put them in a package. And then you had to make sure where that guy was at, that the mail would get there in time for him to get it at that spot. So that evolved. The next thing that was hot is FedEx come out. So now you could take all those photos you had, and you could put them in the package and they could be there the next day to the customer. Okay. And I had 6 different airplanes. Okay. That I flew, and I'd have customers that would call me in the daytime, and these are bona fide customers. I know they want to buy, and they start talking to me. We talk and everything. I said, "Where are you at?" And I remember I used to go, like Buster Brown would call me and say, "Gary, I'm in Texarkana.
Arkansas. Yeah.
Yeah. I say, "Okay." I say, "I'll tell you what, Buster, I had a big map on my wall." I don't know if you remember that map I had on my wall in my office, but it was a big map, and that people had it. Like if you went to the airport where they had the private airplanes, you'd see those. So I just I had a string there where you could just string out from where I was at, and you could measure the mileage. And I say, "I'll tell you what, Buster, I'll be there at, how about if I get there about 10 o'clock tonight?" Well, I stay at the shop until 5, leave there, go to the airport, get my airplane and fly to Texarkana that night and get on the show at maybe 10, 11 o'clock at night, closing time. And then I'd spend, you know, the next day there with them, and I'd always come back with an order. So that's how I would fly to go see these guys. So that was a good experience.
You even flew to Hawaii. Huh? Was that one of your tougher sales with the,
I didn't fly to Hawaii, but I used to go there and sell Connie Fernandez.
Right.
And Connie was a great guy. He was one of the funniest guys in the business. Between
and
him
and a bunch of FECs, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Connie was a great guy, and he was funny as hell in the business. So was Jerry Murphy. But Connie, one time I flew to Dallas and I'm at the, flew into the state fair, and Connie was there. And so him and me and Mac Deuce went to dinner. And then Connie says, "Hey, I got to go I'm leaving to go look at some spots." He said, "I got to go to," can't remember. He had to go to, I think Mobile, not Mobile, but he had to go to Birmingham. He wanted to go look at a place for an FEC there. And then he wanted to go to Atlanta, look at another place for an FEC. And then he wanted to go to Orlando. Okay. So I got my plane sitting in Dallas. I said, and I wanted to be around Connie a little bit more because the longer I'd be around Connie, the more I'd sell him. Okay. So I said, "Connie, you want me to run you those spots in my airplane?" "Hey, Gary," he said, "that'd be great." So like the next day we took off and we got in the plane. And I used to, so I got in the plane and we're going to the first airport. I think it was Birmingham we flew into. So I used to have this box. It was a twin engine airplane. I used to have this box a Tupperware box. And in that Tupperware, I had all these things like you'd get on an airplane. I had these nice packets of cheese and crackers, and had nice little candies in there. And then I had nice little small bottles of orange juice, pineapple juice, tomato juice, and all this stuff. So anyhow, we got up, got flying. I give Connie, I said, got that box. I said, here, Connie, get something to eat. Well, he ate about the whole box, okay? And then you look down there by his feet, and there's wrappers down there at the bottom with the cracker wrappers and all this shit. So anyhow, we're flying into Birmingham, and Connie, I told you, Connie's a funny guy. He tells you story after story after story. So we're flying to Birmingham, and I'm on final, okay, with my airplane. I got a headset on. I'm trying to listen to what they're telling me. Because you got to, you know, you're flying into the big airport with the other airplanes. You got to be sequenced, right? Everything. And Connie just keeps on talking. He said, Connie, just let me land a plane, you know. So I had to tell him all that. But it was funnier than hell. I took him there. Then I took him to Atlanta. And then I took him to Orlando. And then after I dropped him in Orlando, then I flew back to Ohio. But I remember the other thing on that same trip. I used to be, I was always kind of a little economical, and I'd always stay. Like, if I took a guy on the road with me, I'd stay in the same room with the guy that worked for me or something. So anyhow, we get to the first hotel that night, I think Birmingham or someplace we stayed over. And we go to the hotel, and I'm up there getting the rooms. And I said, you want to share the room? He said, I like you, Gary, but not that much. So it was kind of funny.
Yeah, I think when you told me that story,
he'd say it funny.
So. I think when you told me that story before, there was an element of the trip growing. Like you went somewhere.
Oh yeah, it grew.
What about we go over here?
No, you're exactly right. The trip grew. First, we were going to Birmingham, then I was going to go home. Then we went to Atlanta, and then we went to Orlando. So yeah, it grew. That's right.
And you were sent on a trailer, and he kept. Well, once we get to wherever.
Well, I think I sold him 8 trailers on that trip. That was a good trip. So
you must, I mean, all the sales calls you've made with people and on their shows and things, you must just have a million memories.
You know what's funny is I'm selling, like, for example, one show you take, like, for example, I started dealing with Hub Lures, okay? And Hub was a great guy. And I started dealing with lures. And so I did business with Hub for a number of years. And then Hub left, and Andy and Lorelei took over. And I sold Andy and Lorelei. And now their son, Andrew, I sell to their son, Andrew. Wow. So that's like 3 generations. And, of course, Gene Clare was there, and Joe Clare. I sold to Gene and Joe. So you start with one guy. I mean, that's how long I've been around, you know. And it's just like the Deglers. I sold Irvin Degler when I was a young guy. And of course, now I sell, and then I sold Donnie trailers, ticket boxes, and trailer. And then I'm selling Andy product today. Okay. So it's kind of like an evolution there. Same thing with the Pews. I sold Bob Pugh, and now I sell his son, Bo Pugh trailers. So there's been a lot of relationships through the years that continue on. Yeah. I mean, like JD Floyd, I sold JD Floyd, and then I sold Jimmy Floyd. And now I sell Jimmy's son trailers. So I mean, there's just tons of those guys that go down and that I've sold over the years that now I sell the, you know, third generation of.
So one of the things that fascinates me about you a little bit that you told me about one time is that you're basically there was an underground racquetball league in the carnival business
there among
carnival owners.
There was.
That you were kind of at the top of. And there were some pretty big names that played.
Well, I wasn't the best. No, I wasn't the best, but I was pretty good. I could hold my own. And, but I tell
but
you
who'd you play? That was what
I tell you who was in it was Bernard Thomas is in his son-in-law, Tom Atkins.
Tom Atkins.
Ray Kamick.
Ray Kamick.
Frank Zajac. Those were the big guys I can remember right now that were in it. And we used to, at every trade show, we'd go out and have a little racquetball tournament. So I'll tell you about the one tournament. We were there at a trade show. So anyhow, I can't remember. We'd go and eliminate. You know, it was just like elimination and stuff, kind of like a little tournament. I think there was 8 or 10 or 12 guys that were playing racquetball at the time. And I was a decent racquetball player. not as good as some other ones. But anyhow, so I go, I played Frank Zajac. Him and I played. I think I beat Frank. But anyhow, I go to...
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to get a phone call now.
Anybody? Yeah, I know. I think that's going to happen. But he's going to deny it, I'm sure.
Edit that video. I won.
Anyhow. So anyhow, now here comes the next guy I got to go against is Ray Kamik. So now Ray comes in. He's about 6'4". He comes into the room, into the racquetball court, and he's got his shirt off, and his whole chest is full of scars. I think he had open heart surgery. He had lung surgery. He was missing a lung.
Oh, boy.
Okay. And I got, just like I said, I just got done playing Frank. And I look at Ray, and I said, man, this is going to be nothing. This guy's missing a lung. He's had open heart surgery. This is going to be easy. This guy hit the ball so hard, I thought the ball, I tell you, he hit the ball so hard, I thought the ball was going to blow up when it hit the wall. Well, anyhow, he just annihilated my ass. So anyhow, but the good guys were there was Ray Kamik, Tom Atkins was real good, and Bernard was real good. So those three guys were all really good. And then there was a bunch of us that was just, you know, mediocre or decent or whatever. So, but it was fun. And you did that at all the different trade shows.
It's hard to kind of imagine like having a league like that these days, you know, with whatever.
Yeah, it's not, you know, the business is a little different than it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't have, you know, you used to go to the trade show and you had a bar, it's a trade show. And I mean, if you didn't go to the bar, it's a trade show, you weren't in the clique. You know, you had to go there. I mean, everybody was there.
Or they'd start saying you were dead or something if you weren't.
Yeah. There. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted to get that in. So, now you're basically.
How do you remember all that, Ron? When I just told you that stuff, you
What's
remember
that?
All that stuff.
I remember everything you tell stories. Me, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay.
and you know that's the other thing with the trailers is you're talking about what you used to sell them for, but you were probably, you know, when you were building those big trailers, you broke. I remember, you know, you broke $100,000 and more with the trailer. You know, with the price of them, which was unheard of. I mean, people used to be like.
That's right.
How much can they afford? Now they're, you know, north of that, well north of that. But that was a big thing. It was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how expensive the trailers were. But they grossed money and they did well and all that. So it's that was really a groundbreaking thing.
You know,
so
now Ron, you're in when I built that first fun house in my first few years of business, I was buying steel. When I built this fun house. In like 19, whatever year it was, 1970 in Floral, I built it in Floral City, Florida. I paid for steel tubing 6 cents a pound. Okay. Well, today that same steel is $1.60 a pound for the same steel. So that just goes to show you how much things have went up.
So now you're building bunk houses largely for people that, and that's like a huge, huge, huge thing for the business with all the H-2B labor we have and all the regulations that are coming out and all the things that have to do and just keeping good help around. It's really an essential thing. So, you know, walk me through that a little bit about how
you came in
there and why it was.
The way that started was I wasn't doing anything. And Bob Myers called me up and he said, hey, Gary, he says, can you come help me? He said, I want to build some bunkhouses and I want to use these old frames I got from these other bunkhouse companies. So I said, okay. So I went to the shop and talked to him for a day or two. And he said, well, why don't you stay around and build these with me or build them? So I helped him get started and build the bunkhouse. So anyhow, about a week or two before Giptown, he says, you know, he said, you've done a good job with this. He said, why don't you take one of these and take it to the trade show and sell the damn things? And he says, I'm not going to be here in my shop. I only got, I'm only on the road for, I'm on the road 7 months and you can have this whole shop. I said, okay, Bob, let's go. So I took it to the trade show. And of course I sold, everybody knew me. So everybody trusted me and they seen the product. They liked the product. So I started, I sold one or two trailers there at that first year I exhibited again with the bunkhouses. And my whole theme on these bunkhouses was I was always I always had great relationships with Carnival owners. So I knew that the Carnival owner wanted to have a bunkhouse that he didn't have to do. He didn't have to do much. Otherwise, he didn't have to manage that bunkhouse. So that's how I come about with the aluminum floors on the trailer. all the interior walls aluminum, real basic aluminum or lighting systems on the inside, and of course doing the package, the air conditioner that we built the can for, and we put in a commercial air conditioner that you can buy anywhere. And so every room would have its own air conditioning, which is a big sell, because you don't have guys fighting over, hey, I'm too hot in this room, or I'm too cold in this room, you know, with one air conditioner, we run a whole trailer. So that's how that come about. And of course I evolved with that, and I think I got about 30 guys in the plant right now. And now I worked in Bob's shop for about 3 or 4 years, and then I built my own plant down the street in Giptown. So, and we're getting ready to add on to that plant. So
that's bigger than 30 by 40, I take it.
What's that?
It's bigger than 30 by 40.
No.
But the regulations you have to meet now, talk a little bit about that, like what they're requiring.
Well, I mean, you know, as far as the bunkhouses and the H2Bs, OEBA has worked with me, and they've had different committees, and we've kind of come up with there's no real set of, the federal government hasn't come out and said what we have to absolutely have. So we've just kind of modulated to what we think the government would like us to have. So that's how we do those, kind of like what we think the government wants us to have.
And that's so much space per person, or?
Well, I've kind of forgot about, I don't point out that the space per person is as important as having the amenities, which is that they always have power. They always have air conditioning. They always have clean rooms. You know, we built these all out of aluminum. And so there's bed bugs, for example, that, you know, if you have a wooden bunkhouse, they're notorious for getting bed bugs. Well, you don't get bed bugs in an aluminum trailer. They won't live on aluminum. So we've never had a bed bug problem like all these other wooden trailers have got, you know, like a regular standard RV type conversion. So it's just the different amenities that, you know, we've come up with that, you know, that they need. So.
And your customers are the same customers that you had before?
Same guys I've always sold to.
Same probably guys. Added a few.
What's that?
Probably added a few now that there's some new shows out
there. Oh, no, we've added. Yeah, I mean, you got new guys. I mean, they're not all third generation guys.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of new people in the business. So.
So selling, you know, those.
Just like I used to sell with the Pew shows. I had Pew shows, sold Danny Houston. I sell to Blake. Blake's kind of buying a lot of stuff from us now. So, I mean, that's just how the generational stuff works, you know. And we've been building, we started building these ticket kiosks for name, which are used fun tag machines. And we've sold quite a few of those. And we've got
moving into the electronic ticketing support, and support in a way, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think that will eventually, I don't think there'll be single ticket boxes in the near future. I think it's all going to be, you know, that type of system.
Yeah, I actually think that the kiosks are going to go away too. It'll just be an app, because there's no need for the kiosk really.
Well, I don't like that concept, Ron.
You're fine. I know.
Huh?
We can build a nice container for my cell phone.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that. I like the concept where they still have the machine, Ron.
Still a place to go. There'll always be a need to go to something for something going on. Oh, yeah,
of course.
But the bunkhouse business, has it just exploded? I mean, people, how often?
No, I hardly build any at all, Ron. Hey, Heller, you don't tell people what kind of, how good the business is. My business is very basic.
Very basic. Yeah. Slow.
Slow.
He's got time to do a podcast, as a matter of fact, during a busy work day.
Yeah, I wouldn't normally have time to do this.
It's people think about things now that they never used to have to think about, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, I guess I'm allowed to smoke on the podcast, huh?
You're allowed to do anything you want.
Oh, okay, good.
Well, how do you think, like, even from when you stopped building the food trailers to now, how much has the business changed? In what ways has it changed, have you seen?
How's it changed? You know, I think the business really has got to make a move. And I said this when I was on the OEBA. The business has got to make a move to where they control. You can't just be, you know, the tail of the dog. You know, I mean, so many people rely upon the committees to create spots for them. And I think the industry has got to get to where they have more say either in the spot, they have more control, or have their own spots, you know, do their own promotions, you know, because I mean, when you're coming in and you got to come in and carnivals are in a bad spot because I mean, they got to, you know, they get this competition coming in with crazy bids and you got to compete with that in the carnival business. It's kind of a tough thing, I think.
Yeah, so no, I think you're right.
I think if carnivals would do more self-promotion, you know, and create more of their own events that they can control over a number of years, I think it'd be a better business.
Well, when I was talking to Danny Houston not too long ago, because I've thought this for a long time, and I worked for a guy and a couple guys that ran their own events and things right. like that. But you know, when Name or what became Name, the guys that were involved started doing it, they said, well, I'm going to buy all the carnivals out and I'm going to control the fair business. Well, that's not the way it works, you know, like you're pointing out, you know, because then they went to West Palm and they said, well, we're going to bring in some sponsors. And West Palm goes, no, you're not. You know, they don't have control of it. It's like you're going to take over the malls by buying Macy's, but Macy's doesn't control the mall.
Right.
You know, the mall controls the mall. So that's a big thing.
Yeah. It's a good industry and it's going good the way it is. But I just think that they could, if they were to branch out a little bit more, I think it'd be better for the industry.
Well, there's a huge opportunity below the, you know, the top level fairs are run fairly well and do well. But when you start getting in some of these county fairs, you can make a big improvement. If you were to buy a fairgrounds, and some people have, like Bob DiStefano bought the fairgrounds in Elberton Straits years ago, bought Anderson.
Vivona's own a fairgrounds or two?
What's Vivona's? That?
Didn't Vivona's own a couple?
Yeah, they bought Henderson, North Carolina. They sold it 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I still work with them actually a little bit, the Henderson Fairgrounds. But once you do that, though, you got to run the event, the place too. You can't just have it as a stop on your router.
You can't do it. You've got to be set up to do it.
It's a different business. But there's a lot of people that run their own events that a bigger show, you know, whether it's, you know, Wade shows or Name or you know, Straight shows or whoever, Degler, I think they should have an event division like you're describing.
Yeah, I think that
find places to go and run, you know, because you have one guy who's good, could run three or four pretty good size events, and then yours, like you're saying. You don't have to negotiate, you don't have to do all the things you're doing. And you know, I'm a little surprised because you know, you see it right away that more people don't do it. I know it's a little scary, it's a little different business, you know, some you might lose money maybe, but really if you find the right person, it's really not that impossible to do, and the downside's not huge, and the upside's good. Well, again,
you'd be a good promoter for that, Ron.
Yeah, thanks. I don't have enough jobs. But like Bob DiStefano is doing it at Dreamland. You know, he runs Nassau Coliseum. He has an event on Long Island, Long Island Fun Fest, Brookhaven, and then he bought the fair in Elberton, Georgia. And those, he's promoted them into big events. You know, but the thing I see that lacks most of the time is they're scared to advertise. They think they're just going to come in, put the wheel up, spend $10,000, and it's going to hit. And it, you know, you got to invest in it. You got to spend what the fair would spend or more, because a lot of fairs don't do it. But there's also the opportunity with buying fairgrounds, because there's so many fairs that are just they're dead, but nobody told them they're dead. You know, they just kind of flip the lights on right before the fair,
they're not managed. Some of them are not managed right, and there's fairs that are managed well. So,
well, it's hard when you got a nonprofit organization or board running a fair. I always say, if I want to bake a cake, I hire a baker. I don't find a board that never baked a cake before.
Yeah.
And everybody has their opinion, because then you end up with a bunch of garbage. You know, it's not a thing. You got to run it right, and it's got to be a solid thing moving forward. That's really interesting that you're of that mind, because I agree with you 1,000%.
Right.
They need to move, because they have all the ingredients already. They just need to find the location and do the thing.
Yeah.
Carnival owners today compared to, you know, when you get started, or even when you're in your heyday building food trailers and things, have they changed a lot? Are they different in ways? What do you see as far as
traits? Well, you know, guys have evolved in business more. You know, I mean, guys, I mean, not all of them, but some of them today. I mean, I do a lot of business. A guy just calls me and I talk to him. And I, you know, it's But I mean, there's some guys that are out there today that are they are more business-like. That makes sense.
Yeah, and they're not like characters or showmen like.
No, I remember. You know, I hadn't heard much of the podcast, which I listened to three of them yesterday, and I was pretty entertained. It was pretty good. I remember he was talking to Phil Vivona.
Yeah, that was a great
interview. He was talking about, you know, you kept asking about who run the thing and stuff. And I went to visit him one time, and I visited him a number of times because I sold a product and everything. But I went to Ottawa, Canada, that Phil said he liked. And I went up there, and I flew my airplane into Ottawa. And I tell you, the guy, it was funny because I got along with John extremely well. And I'd been to John's house, and he was my kind of guy. You know, if John told you something, you could believe in it. But I remember he had an office trailer there, and the top deck floor, it's kind of an open layout. And the top of the, up, when you went up the fifth wheel, there was a little boardroom built into it. Otherwise, chairs, you know, around like a conference table. So anyhow, they kept calling him, John, you got to get in. Me and John were outside, and John was smoking a cigarette, and I was smoking a cigar. And so anyhow, like I said, John was a character. So anyhow, they kept calling, John, you got to come up. We're having this meeting. You got to come up here. You got to come up there. So finally, he walked into the, he said, come on up here, Gary. So I went up into the boardroom up there with him. And everybody said they were already set down and doing all this meeting in there. So they started talking about, hey, what trailers we're going to move with what trucks and how we're going to move this shit here and that stuff there and all this kind of stuff. And then John, so hold on a minute. Here's what we're doing. You're going to put this, da, 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 da. He just went in, he'd been in the meeting for a minute and a half. They'd been in there for an hour or two, all the other brothers. And he come in, no, we're going to do it. And they said, oh, okay, John. Okay. All right. Everything. Yep. And it was over. He said, let's go back outside, Gary. I said, okay. So he was in control, I think.
No question. He was the visionary in that place. I mean, Morris was a you know, great guy and a steady hand. And people loved him.
Oh, yeah.
But John was the guy.
Man, did he live a long time.
He did, into his 90s.
I mean, I talked to him and Morris Jr. at IAPA the year before he died. At the trade show, and Morris was just right on it all the way. You know, he knew everything.
So. Well, the funny thing about him, and I think it's a secret of aging, is when he was 50, he looked like he was a little older, like a grandfather, but then he just never aged after that. He was kind of like always like a senior guy. But when he was like 92, I was at a trade show with him, and I would tease people. I'd be like, oh, Morris just turned 75. They didn't bat an eyelash. They believe he's 75. He'd laugh.
Is that right? You know,
he's laughing at that thing and say, he's 92.
Oh, what? Yeah. You were around those guys a long time.
Yeah, quite a while. I still work with them some.
That's where I met you when you worked over there.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did, after Phil had bought his trailer.
There you go.
Near Gibtown. Yeah. That's awesome. So you're looking forward to going to Gibtown? We just got a couple minutes left. Anything else you can...
Well, we got IAPA coming up next week.
You have a booth there?
We're going to get IAPA. And I always loved Gibtown because that was the first trade show I ever did. And I mean, it's kind of special in my heart.
Yeah, so, you can tell you love that place.
Yeah, I like it. I've been there. You know, I started, like I said, I was there since like 72. So how many years would that be this year? This is, 24?
52 years, right?
52 years, yeah. So I've been there for 52 years, so.
That is a special place. I mean, the people.
I remember at IAPA. You know, I remember when I quit going to IAPA officially, I was the number five guy with seniority.
Really?
At IAPA. Okay. So I got to sit wherever I wanted to sit. Dick Chance and I both were. Dick had a little more seniority than I did. But we'd always take a booth side by side because we always got the best booth in the place. But. So anyhow, when I quit going to IAPA formally, I was the fifth on seniority. The first highest seniority was Philadelphia Toboggan. Okay. The guys who made the ski balls and the roller coasters and all that stuff. And Eli was there and Selner and I think Chance, and I think it was me. We were the fifth. I was like the fifth longest seniority there. So
PTC doing the thing.
Yeah.
So Gary, I want to thank you so much for coming on, and thank your support staff, your son and your daughter.
And they're both, hey, they're both doing a great job.
They are doing a great job.
You know, my son was a football coach at the University of Missouri for 12 years.
And he's a good player too, right?
He was a very good player. He started for 4 years.
It's amazing. That's amazing. But I'm looking forward to seeing you in IAAPA and, of course, in Gibbtown. And I'm sure you'll have plenty to share with the business and all that's going on.
Are you playing pickleball, Ron?
No, man. Tennis or table tennis.
Okay. All right, Ron. Well, I appreciate it, man.
Thank you so much. And thanks for all you do. And thanks all you've done for me over the years. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you, Ron.
Talk to you soon.